This half hour, we're going to chat with the folks at the Mackinac Center and the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. The Vice President, the Director of the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation will be joining us here shortly. You guys may have heard about this story, the Michigan Employment Relations Committee considering a petition by Graduate Employees Organization at the University of Michigan deciding whether to unionize graduate student research assistants. And the Mackinac Center involved in this one, referring back to a 1981 ruling that the student researchers should not be public employees, so what should we call them? Well, they wanted to be unionized. They put that out for request again with the Michigan Employment Relations Committee, and the verdict is in. We will touch on that issue here pretty shortly here on News Talk 580, talking with the Mackinac Center and the director of their legal foundation. Coming up shortly. All right, moving on to the Mackinac Center. And again, we mentioned this just a moment ago. We're talking with the folks from the Mackinac Center and the Legal Foundation. The director there is Patrick Wright, who joins us on the phone now. And Patrick, I appreciate you joining us here on News Talk 580 this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on to talk about what's going on with the Michigan Employment Relations Committee. And I think I began talking about this before you were on the line, so I gave just a brief background of the 1981 ruling involving undergraduate or graduate student research assistants back in 1981. But as the Mackinac Center and you guys have alluded to, this issue had already been decided. Give me, let's start with the Cliff's Notes. Give us a broad overview of what this issue this really is all about and how it came about this summer.
Sure. In Michigan, it used to be the case that you couldn't unionize any public employees. And then in 1965, there was a law passed that allowed some public employees to be unionized. And the question that was presented in 1981 was whether graduate student research assistants at the University of Michigan were in that definition of public employee. After 19 days of hearings, thousands of pages of exhibits being entered, and hundreds of pages of legal briefs, the Michigan Employment Relations Commission decided that graduate student research assistants were not public employees, but were generally just students going after their doctorate degrees, and therefore couldn't be forced into a union and made to pay dues. And then that question came up again here because the same union against the same university tried to unionize the same group of students, and we said that they shouldn't be able to do that.
And primarily, not just on the merits of the case, but primarily the argument was this has already been decided.
Yeah, I mean, there's two different questions that were involved. One is the public policy question itself of where we should have, if we should have any, public sector unionism. And then the second is a rule of law question. That's primarily what we've been focused is on this rule of law, which is the legislature makes the determination of who is and is not a public employee when they set the statutory definition. This labor agency, the Michigan Employment Relations Commission, is the first group that generally interprets who is and is not a public employee. And what you had happen here is you had the University of Michigan regents on a partisan vote say that they were going to determine that these people were public employees. Well, that's not their job. They're allowed to set general policy for the university, but they're not allowed to change a statute or a judicial decision that their political allies don't like. And so that was the primary focus of our legal action.
Was there much discussion in that Board of Regents meeting or minutes of that meeting in terms of why they should be considered public employees, or was it just a yay or nay vote?
Well, it appears from the back and forth that was going on between the regents that the Democratic regents sprang this on the Republican regents who weren't aware that this was coming. And so it looks like it was done at the behest of the labor unions and was kept secret from the Republican members who are generally have less ties to labor.
So what actually brought it out to the Mackinac Center and the Legal Foundation? Was it this graduate student research assistant, Melinda Day, that was concerned
yeah.
about this? Was it a student-initiated a claim?
Yeah, she came to us and said that you know, she was concerned about this. She was a graduate student, research assistant. She doesn't believe in unionization, and she felt betrayed by the University of Michigan and by the regents, and wanted somebody to come in and help her fight this, and we agreed to do that.
So how far did they get beyond the Board of Regents in terms of taking action to unionize?
They got fairly close. The Michigan Employment Relations Commission was not enforcing its own decision until we came in and reminded them that this thing existed and that they're only allowed Employment Relations Commission is only allowed to deal with public employees. And we said, you've already determined these people aren't public employees, so how can you run an election? If you determine they can't be public employees, you can't place them into a public employees union. And Merck agreed with that, and just yesterday dismissed the attempt to unionize the graduate students.
We're talking with Patrick Wright, the director of the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation. If you got a question or want to join in on this, 947-0023, 855-CALL-580 is the toll-free number. So, Patrick, now that this ruling has come out yesterday, obviously brand new, but what happens from here? Is this a dead issue, or could the university, the Board of Regents, try to pursue this in some other avenue?
Well, the university is probably going to stay neutral on it. The union can appeal. I suspect that they have two real options. One of them is to file a motion for reconsideration at the Michigan Employment Relations Commission, asking them to redetermine their decision. And the other one is to go to the Court of Appeals and try their appeal there.
Were these graduate students, the research assistants, was this in a particular department? Was it a particular school within the university, or was it just
university-wide?
University-wide. And did you hear from other students other than Melinda Day, or were there others that kind of joined in the discussion, or was there testimony from any of them?
There was a lot of other students. There's a Facebook page. There's about 2,100 students that would be affected. There's, I think, around a little over 200 that have joined a Facebook page that are against it. I don't know if that's the full extent of the students that are opposed. I
sure.
Suppose that there's more. But, yeah, there's been a fair number of students who are against this concept.
How important was Melinda Day's involvement in not only bringing this to your attention, obviously, but really, really preventing this from happening? Is it safe to say that without her or some of the students speaking up, that this could have just kind of snuck under the radar?
It's certainly possible. I mean, the dissenting regents, the Republican regents, were obviously displeased. The university was displeased. It received a fair amount of national attention when the regents' vote occurred. But you always do need people to take a principled stand. Unless people fight for what they believe in, then there are opportunities for people that are a bit unscrupulous to take advantage of the system. And one of those, we would argue that that's what was happening here until we came in and got involved.
And you alluded to the fact that that this student in particular kind of felt betrayed by the Board of Regents.
Correct.
And is that... I don't know, water under the bridge now that this ruling has been settled? Is everything back to normal for the students?
Well, it's been relatively soon, I doubt that the entire issue is over, but I think she feels pleased that somebody was there to represent her interests, and that, this vote, at least temporarily, for now, is certainly off. So, I wouldn't say everything's entirely back to normal, but it's off to an awful good start.
Great. Well, Patrick, what else is going on at the Mackinac Center and or with the Legal Foundation? Any other big issues that you guys are still tackling this summer or as we head through the rest of 2011?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on in Michigan in general, as you're aware of, that the Mackinac Center is involved in. Our new Capital Confidential newspaper continues to grow by leaps and bounds and has great stories on it each and every day. We're involved. We've been requested to do a lot more legislative testimony about some issues regarding what is and isn't going on with the state. We just got over working on a important Freedom of Information Act case, and that may or may not lead to some legislative changes. We're hoping that it will, to make sure that FOIA remains a viable way of keeping a check on our government, particularly given the role that citizen journalists and citizens in general are going to play in the future here as traditional newspapers subside. So there's still a lot going on here at the Mackinac Center.
I'm on your Capital Confidential website for those folks interested, MichiganCapitalConfidential.com. There's an article here as well for folks to peruse over on the Heritage Foundation and Obamacare. There's another right up here on the teacher union, wrong about, quote, tax breaks for rich CEOs. So is this not just nationally, but definitely here in Michigan, the things that that folks are talking about, and you can get some local insight on what's going on as well?
Sure. What we're doing is we're providing a news source that we think has been under viewpoints that have been underutilized previously, particularly, again, with the way that the media industry is going. We think that there isn't a lot of capital reporting going on. So we're trying to discuss things that people don't typically see brought up with their school districts, with government, and unique and important perspectives. And it's growing by leaps and bounds. We're extremely happy with it. The main page, Mackinac.org, also has a lot of the stuff that we've been working on. We have a bunch of new teacher databases that are available for people that are interested in checking out perhaps the contracts that their local teachers have. We just have tons of resources on the page.
Absolutely. We'll encourage folks to check that out as well. For folks who haven't done before, Mackinac.org, that's Mackinac with a C for the Mackinac Center. And as you said, MichiganCapitalConfidential.com. as well, and I've checked this out quite a few times, Patrick. You guys do a lot of great stuff, so I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, we'll take a quick break here on News Talk 580 WTCM. More after this. Thanks to Pat Wright from the Mackinac Center for chatting with us on that issue at the University of Michigan. And one other thing I wanted to read to you from Michigan Capital Confidential is, as he alluded to, and I kind of glanced at it during the break, teacher union, the MEA, funding billboards criticizing the governor's tax reform. This is from Michigan Capital Confidential. Billboards claiming that the governor's tax reform created a $1.8 billion tax break for rich CEOs, implying that big business is benefiting from these tax incentives. And the Michigan Capital Confidential and the fiscal policy director at the Mackinac Center saying that's not true. They're saying that the small mom-and-pop businesses are the ones that are being incentivized. They are getting the biggest share of the incentives, and in fact, if anything, large businesses, large corporations are the ones that are hurting because a lot of the tax credits that they had been receiving have been eliminated under the plan that's currently working through Lansing. And here's one other one. Brandon, you might like this. Did you ever skip school in high school?
Never.
Never, like?
Perfect attendance.
20 or 30 times,
perfect,
you mean?
Attendance.
Also from Capital Confidential, Lansing students, especially those under age 16, could face disciplinary action from the school district if they accumulate 10 or more absences. However, a study of the Lansing School District shows the average teacher was absent for 3.5 weeks during the 2011-2012 school year.
The average?
Yes.
Wow.
17.6 days. According to information received via Freedom of Information Act request, the absence did include things like illnesses, military leave, conferences, and maternity leave, also included other time off. Teachers absent about 10% of the time.